Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I was doing some Snapchat, Instagram, Periscope stuff, sorry.
What were you Snapchatting?
I don't know. Just sounded good.
I'm impressed that you even know Snapchat existed.
I know a lot of things exist.
My kid doesn't even do Snapchat that often. Actually, I don't know that he has one, but he doesn't Snapchat anybody. He goes, I'm not very social. I said, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I'm not very social.
National Labor Relations Board did rule in favor of Northwestern. But my understanding always has been from someone I know that had a pretty good handle on what was going on there that the vote was nearly 4-1 against anyway. That if they unsealed it, it would have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 against a 15-4. But I think it's an important, they say it's a big win for the NCAA. The NCAA had nothing to do with this. If they did, that would have meant testimony and then would have meant the door to the dark room being open because they don't testify well in court. But this was a board ruling. Union versus versus institution and vice versa. I mean, so this was actually that's what it came down to. Football and men's basketball are going to be just fine. That's never the issue with this. But what, for example, if the shop steward? Now filing grievances, I understand. But now you go in with a series of labor-related demands. Okay, well, it's football and men's basketball, so you got a series of labor-related demands. Well, how much do those labor-related demands cost? And by the way, where's that money going to come from? And do you have to make cuts in order to meet the demands? Well, who gets cut? I can tell you football and men's basketball are going to get cut. At one point, Temple was dropping 7 sports to try and make the budget work. So,
one thing I was reading with the NLRB determining and certifying that the players' petition would not actually start, one of the things I think that it was really good on their part is they recognize that athletic scholarships are like the compensation in exchange for working for the school. In other words, the work study program that a lot of students use to pay the remainder of their college bill,
right?
They consider this part of that, and I think that's a very good point. That I haven't heard even you and I haven't really talked about it in that way, in that comparison. And I thought that was a really good comparison on their part.
That it's in lieu of payment.
Well, it's in lieu. It's the same as exchange, like working for school on the work study program, where you use that money to pay your tuition.
Right, and that's what they do.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it that way, and I haven't heard anybody else talk about it that way. That's a great example of what the athletes are doing. They're working more and using that money to pay for their scholarship, the way another student would work 20 or 30 hours a week and using the $4,000 or $5,000 to pay the rest of their tuition.
Testimony in the case found that players endured 14-hour days practicing football in August before school started and practiced another 40 to 50 hours a week during the school year. There is no way on the face of the earth they are practicing 40 to 50 hours a week during the school year. You want to know how long practice goes? All right. Now you may have meetings, weight room, things like that. But in actual, do you think they're on the practice field 40 to 50 hours a week? Really? Really?
I would say 3 hours a day at most.
That includes being taped up in the training room. Practice here goes 4:35 to 6:35. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's six. They do a walkthrough on Sunday, a walkthrough on Friday. We're now at 7 hours of practice. Seven. That's it.
High school teams seven. Practice more than that.
I doubt they do. If you're smart with your high school football program, you are not practicing more than 8 hours a week.
It's usually about two hours a night. Usually like 3:30 to 5:30. And then like you said, probably a shorter walkthrough on Thursday before the game.
They're not doing anything on Thursday. There's as much contact on Thursday. There's more contact on the New York subway than there is on a football practice field the day before a game.
In high school, you're basically looking at Monday as your film day because half your team is going to be playing a game. That's JV night. Tuesday is your full contact practice. You probably have a full contact practice on Wednesday. Thursday is your walkthrough. Friday is your game. Saturday and Sunday, you're off.
Man, if you're hitting a lot on Wednesday for the game, I don't think you're doing a very good job there either. You got to hit some on Wednesday, but you can't hit a lot. Practice has changed over the years. Practice has dramatically changed. It is about reps. It is not about belting.
Well, when I say contact, that's usually the last half hour of practice at most anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's about...
Yeah, the first one are agilities. The first part are agilities and bags and drills.
Right. So, that's what practice is. Now, what about film time? All right, yeah, there's film time, there's meetings. You probably get to the building at, I don't know, let's say 2 in the afternoon. You're probably done at 7. So you put in 5 hours on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's 15 hours. Friday, you're probably putting in 3 hours. That's 18. Sunday, you're putting in 3 hours. We're at 21 plus the game. We're 25 hours for the week.
Now, what's the schedule? What's the class schedule like for a player?
But I'm saying that this is the testimony. Okay, now the 14-hour days practicing football in August, okay, that is actually, I think, a legitimate point. Today, for example, today, Penn State had two-a-days. I've seen the full camp schedule. There's a full camp schedule. But that camp schedule in the 14 hours included lunch today and includes dinner tonight. But they are up early. They were on the practice field this morning at 9:25. They got off the practice field this morning at 11:15. They are back on the practice field at 5:25 this evening. And they're going to 7:05 tonight. So they're going 90 minutes this morning and they're going 90 minutes tonight. Now tomorrow they have one practice. Then they'll have two on Wednesday, same schedule. One on Thursday, two on Friday, then they have a scrimmage, then they get Sunday off. But they have Monday off too. They got 2 days off. Now that's training camp. There's no classes right now. That's why they do two-a-days this week. Now during the week, again, they'll play the game. Okay, so you start Saturday. They have meetings, They have a squad meeting, and then they do a walkthrough. The walkthrough lasts 30 minutes. Monday, they are off. They are off Monday. And Tuesday, that's a full practice. There's certainly plenty of contact in that practice. Some on Wednesday. Thursday. Okay. They're in the, it's all rep and review on Thursday out of the practice field. You're not even wearing pads. And Friday's a walkthrough. And when I mean walkthrough, I mean walkthrough. Okay, everybody, line up for kickoff. All right, everybody, stay in your lanes. Might as well play the theme to Chariots of Fire as they do it. So this testimony is just bizarro world. Okay, the 14-hour days practicing football in August, there are some days and two-a-days that happens. We're between meetings, being taped, practicing in the morning, okay, lunch, review, come back, practice in the afternoon, eat dinner, whatever. Okay, so maybe 3 days are like that. Three days are 14. 40 to 50 hours a week during the school year practicing. No way. In addition to attending classes and completing coursework, during the course of the year, they can spend as much as 1,750 hours practicing, playing, and traveling to and from games. Really? No. Who came up with that number? And that's what, remember when this came out, I talked about this particular part of the testimony. And I said, that's a fraud. It's a fraud. Whomever gave them that number, it's a fraud. Now, if Kane Coulter gave them that number, maybe as a quarterback, he took stuff back to his dorm room and was looking at it. He counted that as practice time. But that's up to him as to whether he wants to watch it or not. Some of these numbers they put out are just absurd. And, you know, when they throw out the word practicing so loosely, when I say practice, what does everybody think when I say practice?
I think full pads.
Yeah.
Like man on man.
You think they're going 40 to 50 hours a week full practice? Are you kidding me? Practice lasts for the whole week, 7 to 8 hours. Max on the field. And two of them are walkthroughs. I mean, this testimony, the rides were open in Fantasyland. Now, they're talking about even though Northwestern isn't a major college powerhouse, the fact is that it's a Big Ten conference school, which helped the football program post an $8.8 million profit. Well, of course it made an $8.8 million profit. And what did they do with the profit? They put it into women's lacrosse, women's basketball, men's soccer. Baseball, that's where they put the profit. The way they put and phrase things, it's all a fraud. I'm sick and tired of people doing things to win and not telling the truth. I'm getting sick of it. The entire point of doing something is not to win. The entire purpose of doing something is just honestly lay it out there and just tell me what you think the deal is. Don't make stuff up or don't give a half truth. Football made $8.8 million in profit at Northwestern. Fine. My next question is, okay, what did you do with it? Well, we have a women's lacrosse program that won 5 national championships. They need X amount of money. It comes out of that fund. We have a men's soccer program. Very good. We need to be competitive. This is how much money they bring in. $1.95. We need to now put extra money in there so that they're able to compete at a high level. That's where the money goes. At this point, you look around and say, okay, now I get it. Just tell people the truth as to what the deal is. Don't do half-truths. Don't make up numbers. The object is not to win. The object is to be right and to be fair. And we've got too many people whose livelihood depends on winning. The head of that union in Chicago only gave a damn about winning. He didn't care about the clients. They were just a means to an end. If you really think that those guys in Chicago really, really deeply care, these are what, the United Steelworkers? I do games. The only steel I see is the seats. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car. Picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself. And negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word. Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. I was just doing a little Periscope, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook. Twitter. I was doing all sorts of social media during the commercial break. It was, what an experience. Maybe not. I just don't like what's happening around us, where the object now is to win when it comes to how cases play out in the court of public appeal or in cases like the NLRB. Northwestern files for unionization. Right? When the players sit there and they vote approximately in the neighborhood of 60 no to 15 for, not even they want to go to the union. And then they make, and you read the filing, and they make up numbers. We practice 1,750 hours. No, you don't. You don't practice as well. Now, do you lift weights? Yeah, you lift weights. Does that count? Yes. Do you go to meetings? Yeah, that counts. Do you physically go on the field? Yeah, that counts. Do you do film review? Yeah, that counts. I mean, there's no doubt it counts. There's no doubt it counts. But it's not quite what it is portrayed to be. I would think, you know, it just isn't. Now, there's more film work than ever before. There's no question about that. Film's invaluable. You know, but you have meetings beforehand. The players come in, they hang in the locker room for a while. I mean, the time that they're hanging in the locker room, just getting dressed to go over, laughing, kidding around, the whole thing, that counts as practice time, too. Hanging in the locker room afterward counts as practice time, too. I mean, there's a lot of things here where I read something like that, and all it tells me is that the object was to win. We practice 40 to 50 hours a week. No, you don't. You don't practice 40 to 50 hours a week. There's no way. The quarterback might do that much. And Kane Coulter, of course, was the one that was the impetus behind this in a quarterback. Now, Coulter also, remember, too, Coulter played tailback, quarterback, and receiver all at the same time. He might have, between tape, playbooks, things like that, he may have put in more hours than other guys to do this. And he's not, and Coulter is a very smart young man. But the guy that played right tackle for Northwestern, when practice was over, he went back to the dorm. His block is the same whether Coulter's playing slot back, tailback, or quarterback. Hey, Harrisburg's the stop tonight. Anything you want me to tell your friends in Harrisburg?
Tell them I said hi and watch for me on Periscope.
Okay, remember, the object of the talk is to get people interested.
Oh, well, in that case, let it go.
I will. Rich Scarcella, next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Rich Scarcella, the Reading Eagle. Today's show being brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley for decades. They've served the valley for decades. They've also given back to the valley for decades. Find out why. There's a big reason why. They understand that service and price mean everything. So when you're sitting there and talking with them, they'll get you the right price for the right insurance that fits your life. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Pocono coming up at the end of the week. Looking forward to talking more about that as the week goes along. But Penn State football is also always going to be a primary topic. And with that, we bring in my good friend, universally respected by everyone. That is Rich Scarcella, the Reading Eagle. Rich, welcome back. It is great to hear you.
Good afternoon, Steve.
All right. Let's talk about the pure eye test. How different does this Penn State football team just look in pure eye test and body build and athleticism?
Well, I think they're definitely, it's going to be a faster team. There's no question about that, a faster and deeper team. I don't know. I've not really noticed the size difference. The one guy that really has stood out to me is Anthony Zettel, that he's lost weight. I shouldn't say he's lost weight. He's lost weight around the middle.
Right.
He just looks thinner, but he's big. He's bigger in his upper body. But like even in his face, it struck me when I first saw him out at Chicago for the Big Ten kickoff. But no question that this team will be a more athletic, a faster team. If you include the freshmen, the redshirt freshmen. I mean, there's no question. The athleticism has taken a bump up.
What were your primary takeaways from the Big Ten media get together?
Oh boy.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I guess the one thing that surprised me, I could not believe the amount of attention that Jim Harbaugh got. Not to say, yeah, of course, he came from the NFL and everything, but it was almost like, it's almost like Vince Lombardi came back to life. It just seemed like there's this buzz about him, and I think it's mostly generated by the Michigan media, because I think it's, I mean, the whole, not just the media, but I think their fan base looks at him as the savior to restore Michigan to where it once was. But that really surprised me. I thought he got more attention than Urban Meyer. And, yeah. Think about it. That's kind of hard to believe. The guy's coming off a national championship and has the team that's ranked number one in the country. So that stuck out to me more than anything.
How did Harbaugh handle it? Because he has roller coaster moments.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there was that infamous interview on ESPN a month and a half ago or so. No, I thought he handled everything well in Chicago. I really do. The 15 minutes at the podium in front of the entire Big Ten media group, and even in the breakdown groups, I thought when I was around, I wasn't around there for all hour and a half that he was available in the breakdown sessions, but I thought he handled things well.
Right. What were some other takes that you had from that, just looking at some other teams that, as you mm-hmm. scrolled through your notes and said, okay, that seems significant, that seemed important. What were a couple of other items from other teams that seemed important?
Well, the other thing, and it's related to Penn State, and I get the feeling that Kyle Flood and Randy Edsall are tired of talking about questions regarding building a rivalry with Penn State. Now, they didn't dismiss them or anything like that, but kind of their body language when they were up there. They answered appropriately. They answered questions the right way, but it seemed to me I think they're a little tired about that. The other thing that stuck out to me, is how impressed I was with Mike Riley.
Yes.
Very, very, very humble. Very humble, not full of himself, very just down to earth. That's what I was looking for. Very down to earth guy. Very impressed with him. And I think he's exactly what Nebraska needs at this moment. And, that stood out. And the other thing that stood out to me is, and I think he is the most underrated coach in the Big Ten, is Jerry Kill. And he must have said in the 15 minutes three or four times how much faster their skill people are. And if that's the case, the West Division better look out. Because if they get athletes at Minnesota, they're going to be there every year.
Right, exactly.
And contending every year.
Right, I think if you're in Nebraska, I think you have to be worried that maybe Minnesota's already passed you out. As for Mike Riley, when Penn State played Oregon State here in 2008, the number of things that Joe said complimentary about Mike Riley, you could tell how impressed he was by him as a person. That's why I'm not surprised he's like that.
Yeah, and apparently he's very close to Jim Harbaugh. Because when he was with the Chargers, Harbaugh was, I think, finishing his playing career and also beginning his coaching career with him. I'm trying to remember now the time frame, but I know Harbaugh mentioned him, that they're pretty close, which is sort of two opposites almost. But Mike Riley just really very impressed with him for sure.
Were you there when Jim Delaney addressed the media?
You know, I just caught part of it because I missed Bill Carollo because I was talking to Jerry DiNardo outside the room. I wanted to catch him. And there were several of us who were talking to Jerry DiNardo and wanted to ask him some Penn State questions. So I didn't catch all of Jim Delaney, no. Anything that you want to discuss specifically?
No, I just wanted to just get it. You're talking about one of the five most powerful guys in the –
in college sports.
In college sports, period. Yeah. So I didn't know if there was anything newsworthy or noteworthy about what he said, or if it was just general.
Well, the thing is, Stephen, the AP made a big deal about this, and maybe I missed it. Maybe I thought I just assumed. But Delaney made a point of saying that beginning in 2016, there's new schedule guidelines, not rules, guidelines, that the Big Ten will play one Power 5 team, a team from a Power 5 conference a year, no FCS team, and, you know, with the advent of the 9-game schedule next year. He made that pretty clear. And somebody asked him if there will be a penalty, and he said no. But I'm going to guess that if a school doesn't do what he laid out, that they'll quickly get a phone call from Commissioner Delaney.
Right. I agree with you. I don't know why it was made a big deal out of, because when they went to the 9-game schedule and made the announcement a couple of years ago, they emphasized that.
Yeah, I thought so, and I was very surprised that that such a big deal was made out of it. But anyway, yeah. I didn't catch much else of the commissioner, though.
Jerry DiNardo and company, I think, should be here, I think, Friday next week. So when you talked to Jerry, what were some of his takeaways?
Well, some pretty obvious things. he said, as Penn State's offensive line goes, so goes Penn State. He made that very clear.
Right.
And in fact, I asked Herb Hand about it last week at Media Day, and he agreed. He goes, we're the most important position on the team. He goes, now Coach Gattis will say that about the wide receivers, and Coach Spencer will say that about the defensive linemen. But we think we're the most important position on the team. And I do believe that. I think this season they will be the barometer to see how well Penn State does. I don't think there's, and I'm not, that's not breaking news or anything, but in my opinion, I think they'll be better. I don't know if they'll be dramatically better. I'm the jury's out on that. I'm not saying they won't be. I just don't know. But I do think, based on experience, based on the second year, being coached by Herb Hand, I think the offensive line will be better.
Obviously, student athletes are brought out to these events. I think it's almost always senior dominated. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you think the leagues, though, lose out on not sending the people that people actually really want to talk to?
Yes. Yeah. I from a coach's standpoint, in terms of dealing with your team, yes, you want to promote your seniors. I understand that. But besides Christian Hackenberg, I'm trying to think of the other people who weren't there. Well, the Ohio State quarterbacks.
Right.
They weren't there.
Right.
I think this event is to promote the league and not to put your best players out there, I think does hurt. And, I do. I can't say that I was outraged by it or anything like or even surprised by it. But I think it does do the league and does do the school an injustice. I think, you want to promote the league at a place where there's a lot of national attention and media, and if you don't have your best players, you're not doing it.
Right. What were your then primary takeaways when you got to Penn State's media day and could be around the players a bit?
Well, there's quite a few things. The one thing is that Bob Shoup's remarks about Marcus Allen. We all know what kind of job that he did the second half of last season, stepping in for Ryan Kaiser, 2 days before the Ohio State game. Basically, you're now the starter. The way he played the second half of the season was just very impressive for a true freshman.
Right.
And when Bob Shoup says he's the Christian Hackenberg of our defense, well, then that opens some eyes. But I think those comments that stood out to me. The confidence of the offensive lineman, that's another thing that stood out to me. How self-assured and not defensive, self-assured they seemed. The other guy, the name that keeps coming up to me, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him, is DeAndre Tompkins.
Mm-hmm.
Not only on offense, but probably more so even on special teams and returning kicks. Those three things, you know, really, they were kind of the fresh things for me, the things that stood out.
Right. As I've been out there doing speaking engagements,
mm-hmm.
A question keeps, of course, you know, I get asked, you name the question, I get asked it. But I get asked about Pitt being on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
What is your thought on, you know, you only have three spots available now. You only have three spots available. And only one of them can be a home and away based on the economic model. So what are your thoughts on that? Because they will be on the next 4 years and starting mm-hmm. next season.
I think it's more of a win-win for Pitt than it is for Penn State.
Right,
and I think if you look at the history of the series, and you know this, there was probably, what, Steve, an eight-year stretch where the series was really, really, really late 70s, early 80s, like really good and intense. But you look at the rest of the series, one point Pitt dominated early on, you know, going back, and then Penn State really, other than those, eight or nine years.
75 to 83 was about the only time.
That's what I was thinking.
Really
okay.
Good. That's it.
And then that's really it. And then Penn State dominated. I mean, I'm not saying Pitt didn't beat them, but I think especially now, and I grew up in Eastern Pennsylvania. I work in Eastern Pennsylvania. I don't look at it as a big deal. I don't even look at it as a rivalry. I just don't.
No.
That's me. Again, the West, people from Western Pennsylvania, maybe Central Pennsylvania, they might feel differently. But I was in school during those games, those really great with great, great Hall of Fame players on both sides. And to me, like, it's you know, that was 40 years ago.
All right.
It's to me, it's, you know, it's a win-win for Pitt. It's not a win-win for Penn State.
That's what I try to explain to people. I mean, there was that era in the early 80s, for
mm-hmm.
example. What was more exciting, having Pitt come in here or Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Not even close.
What was more exciting, Pitt coming in here or Alabama?
Alabama.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Pitt, Nebraska.
Nebraska.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I'm just taking, these are all games played in the same season.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number four game.
Yes.
What I've said to people is this. I understand the desire to have Pitt on the schedule. I understand
mm-hmm.
that. But you only have three openings.
And you're probably, based on how difficult this division looks.
Yeah.
I'm talking long range. I'm not talking about the next 2 years.
No.
I'm talking about the big picture.
10 years.
Right, 10 years. How difficult this division is, Penn State should only schedule one opponent from a Power 5 conference. Okay?
Right.
Because you're going to be playing every year Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. Plus, wait till Wisconsin, Nebraska come back on the schedule in whatever years. I don't know off the top of my head, but that's my point. So you have room for one, more or less, one Power 5 team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be Pitt every year.
No, I think
that's my opinion, but I don't. I don't think it should be.
And here's the other object. What's the goal here? The goal is to win the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And you may want to schedule a certain way a couple of years because you're in the thick of it. You may
mm-hmm.
want to schedule up a couple of years because you think you need the RPI bump
right.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Pitt doesn't do that. And guess what? When you're the national champion, you're also the champion of Western Pennsylvania. So,
yeah.
I mean, it is included in the country.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, I have my kids have friends who went to Pittsburgh, and I think very highly of the school and everything. I'm not one of those Pitt bashers, but if you just look at it try to be objective here, Pitt has everything to gain.
Oh yes, no.
Penn State does not.
Right, they're in the no. game position. Yep.
No, it does. It's a win. Like I said, even playing Penn State is a win-win for Pitt because they're going to get a sellout. You know, for a home game, just based on that, they don't sell out every game. They don't sell out any game, do they?
No, the worst thing that can happen to them is that when they're not playing Penn State, they have a blimp. It doesn't look good.
No. And I'm,
a lot
you
of
know,
yellow
just,
seats.
Those are the realities of the situation. What I would rather see Penn State play, I know this is a pipe dream, I would rather see them play a team from the SEC.
Sure.
And I don't care who it is.
Right.
I mean, you know, whether it's Tennessee or LSU or whoever. Now, I'm not sure if the SEC would jump at that either,
right.
or play a Pac-12 team,
right.
or a big, you know, even a Big 12 team,
right.
just something different, a true intersectional game. But we'll see. You know, I'm sure, you know, James Franklin and Sandy Barber are working on that and looking down the road, and but I wouldn't be terribly upset, and I don't. I think that too many people on this side of the state would be terribly upset if they only played Pitt these next four seasons.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You have to be a forward thinker, and you have to see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just do everything short term. And if you're thinking big picture, they fit in occasionally, but not every year.
No, not every year. I'm not saying never play them. I'm not saying that. Don't play them every year. I don't think Penn State has to do that.
You and I have the exact same opinion about that. Occasionally, fine. Every year, no. Rich, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always, my friend. Can't wait to see you up here.
My pleasure, Steve. Take care.
Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Great to have him on board today. We can always talk Penn State football anytime. They have the scrimmage, of course, that took place on Saturday. They're now into two-a-days. They'll go one tomorrow, two Wednesday, one Thursday, two on Friday, and then they have more coming up on Saturday. So it's another big week. Pocono, of course, this week. So Kevin's all revved up and excited about that. Today's show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And from the Sunbury Motors Studio, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK.